Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you today, and we are back to going over the college draft prospects. We're doing them by school, and today's program will focus on the Crimson Tide. So here to help me break everything down is Jimmy Stein. He is the co-host. He's one of the co-hosts of it's Locked On Crimson Tide, right, Jimmy? Did I have that right?
Locked On. Yeah, sure. Locked On Bama.
Locked On Bama. And Jimmy, let's jump right in. There are a couple of prospects that have been linked to the Giants in the draft out of Alabama. And the first one is tackle Jedrick Wills. What can you tell us about him as a prospect, where he projects, what position he played, and whatnot?
He was a guard in his true freshman season at Alabama and then kicked out to tackle. One thing that I find interesting, Patricia, about Wills is there's a question in the NFL about whether he'll be a right tackle or left tackle, because he was a right tackle at Alabama. But let's remember, at Alabama, for the last 2 years, the quarterback has been left-handed Tua Tagovailoa. So even though Jed Wills played right tackle, he was actually protecting Tua's blind side and only gave up one sack in two seasons. Great kid. The best thing I can say about Jed Wills, had something like a 3.79 grade point average in finance, which is considered the most difficult. Alabama has a business school with a national reputation. Finance is considered the toughest major in the business school. Jed Wills, being such a huge, important part of the football team, managed a 3.79 GPA in one of the toughest curriculums on campus. So that tells you a lot about what kind of kid he is. Really, really tough, better in the run game than the pass game, a real mauler on that right side whenever Alabama needed some tough yards. The last couple of years, you could bet they were running behind that right side. So Wills going at number four to the Giants would not shock me at all, but as you well know from studying this draft, it's a really good tackle class. There's Wirfs from Iowa and Becton from Louisville, and Wills from Alabama, Andrew Thomas from Georgia. If the Giants want to tackle at four, and they very well may do that, Wills certainly belongs in that group, but you probably can't go wrong with any of them.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically about Wills and what you think sets him apart from the other top tackles in this class.
Yeah, two or three things to me. Again, his intelligence, we just went over, real, real smart, hardworking guy. Was an impactful player at Alabama right away. He didn't start as a true freshman, but he did play, and that's pretty impressive at a program like Alabama, which has as much talent as anyone in college football, and then was a starter as a true sophomore, and then this past season as a junior. So he's only a three-year player, which makes him young, but he has been a two-year starter. I think playing at Alabama, you know, Alabama has more NFL players from its program than any other program in college football right now. And I think a large part of that is how well prepared they are. If you watch Alabama play offense, even though you would think, well, Alabama's a spread team because of Tua, that's true. But Alabama still looks like an NFL team. It's an NFL offense. And when you're playing against SEC competition week in and week out, you know Wills is tested playing against SEC pass rushers every single week. So I think for the fact that he's battle-tested, playing in a program that produces more NFL players than anyone, playing against that great competition. And again, even though a right tackle at Alabama, he had left tackle responsibilities. So I think that resume may set him apart from the other guys. But again, Wirfs and Becton are great prospects. They didn't play. Becton and Wirfs didn't see the pass rushers that Will saw week in and week out. I think that's another thing that makes Wills a really solid prospect.
What type of blocking scheme did they run down there in Alabama? Was it an inside zone or an outside zone or what?
Yeah, it's an inside zone blocking scheme, and Alabama's been very consistent with that for several years. But just think of a handful of these offensive linemen that Alabama has produced over the years. Ryan Kelly, I'm talking about in recent years, Ryan Kelly, the center for the Colts, Fluker with the Seahawks. The Seahawks signed Chance Warmack just this week. Cam Robinson with the Jaguars. Jonah Williams was a top 10 pick last year by the Bengals. Alabama has produced a ton of offensive linemen that have been drafted very high in the draft. And Jed Wills is as good as any of them. I remember 1 year ago, Patricia, some of these very early mock drafts had Alabama's other junior tackle, Alex Leatherwood, projected as a first-round pick, and Wills wasn't anywhere to be seen. But those of us who know the Alabama program really, really well, we were like, you watch, in a few months, that's going to flip. Wills is going to be the guy that the NFL likes, even more so than Leatherwood. And perhaps we'll see Leatherwood as a projected first-round pick in 2021.
Now, in addition to Jedrick Wills, there were a couple of other guys coming out of Bama I've seen their names linked to the Giants in mock drafts. Jerry Jeudy, obviously, the receiver, they're not going to get. I doubt they're going to go for him because I don't think he'll be on the board. But safety Xavier McKinney is a name that I've seen linked to the Giants. What can you tell us about his play?
Great player, another good kid, a leader. Alabama didn't have a lot of leadership on defense this year, but when they did, it came from Xavier McKinney, also a true junior. He was in the signing class along with Wills, played immediately, starter the last 2 years. I felt I think because Alabama's defense as a whole took a dip in production, McKinney got left out of some of these late season awards. That he may have deserved inclusion. He really had a very good year. He's a very good tackler, not so much a big hitter, but a solid tackler. You didn't see Xavier miss many tackles at all. Again, not a giant, enforcer across the middle, but just a really solid tackler. But for a guy who tackles so well, he's a cover guy too. I mean, he can play center field. He has ball skills. He led Alabama in interceptions this past season. Again, another super kid. His intangibles are great. McKinney will understand and pick up a scheme really quickly, and he has leadership skills too. I feel like McKinney is probably a late first-round pick, somewhere in the 20s, but he could fall to the second round as well with safety not being such a high value position in the draft. It wouldn't shock me at all to see Xavier go in somewhere in the first 10 picks of the second round either.
Is he the type who you think would be like day one ready?
Yes, exactly. Just like Wills, smart, picked up on things quickly. Again, Alabama runs very similar offensive and defensive schemes to the NFL. And at Alabama, when you have a true freshman that shows up and plays quickly, even if they're not starting, but when they're playing quickly as a true freshman, there's all the evidence you need that they can pick up on things at a high level. And McKinney and Jed Wills both played quickly, smart guys, leaders, and they'll be very solid, not only early starters, but just really solid citizens too.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Jimmy Stein of Locked On Bama. We are breaking down some of the Crimson Tide draft picks or draft prospects, I should say, who might have links to the Giants. And in particular, Jimmy, Joe Judge, the Giants head coach, he comes from the Bill Belichick school. He also comes from the Nick Saban school. And before I go into some more specific players from Bama who are in this draft, I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you might be hearing about, the Giants' interest in the Bama players, because obviously Joe Judge, having worked with Nick Saban before, he's familiar with how Saban puts together his program, how he teaches and brings these players together. And of course, Judge hired, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name, running
Burton
backs.
Burns.
Burton Burns. Sure. He hired Burton Burns from the program. So I'm just wondering, how much of that are you hearing or do you anticipate might factor into some of the Giants' draft decisions?
I think it easily could. I think in support staff positions, there's been a couple of other hires that Coach Judge had developed contacts when he was at Alabama and has made some other hires that are sort of Alabama related. Interestingly, Joe Judge was a special teams analyst for Alabama and Nick Saban, I believe, in 2009 when Alabama won a national championship, maybe 2009 and 2010, before leaving to be a support staff guy for the Patriots and Bill Belichick. So he's worked for maybe the best college head coach of all time and then the best NFL head coach of all time, which just shows what kind of you can't get a better start in coaching than that. So you do hear his name around quite a bit. I think hiring Burton Burns is going to know these Alabama players extremely well. I'm sure he'll be an advocate for the ones that fit the Giants' needs. And so they'll know these Alabama guys. None of them were of course around when Coach Judge was at Alabama, but Burton Burns has been around for all of these kids' careers, even though he wasn't coaching on the field the last two or three years. He's been around the building and around the program, and he's going to know all these kids personally. So I think they'll have good insight into all the Alabama kids.
We've spoken about Wills and Xavier McKinney. Another guy I think potentially that might draw the Giants' attention. I don't know if they'll necessarily be able to get him, but a guy who I know is intriguing is Henry Ruggs III, the receiver. What does he bring to the table?
Well, the thing that's incredible about Ruggs is, first of all, he ran a 4.27 at the combine and was disappointed. He thought he could make a real run at the combine record, a 4.22. Didn't get that, but I thought it was almost hilarious, the disappointment in the voices at the NFL Network when Ruggs only ran a 4.27. So he brings blistering speed. But it seems to me that every year there's a fastest receiver in the draft, whoever that happens to be. And many times that guy, he's just a track guy. He can just run. Well, let me tell you, Ruggs would be a fantastic NFL prospect even if he ran in the mid 4.5s because of his ball skills. He's tough. He has great hands. It is rare that Ruggs drops a ball. He's made the circus catches. He's tough as nails, a great outside blocker. Ruggs is a good all-around receiver. Even though Jerry Jeudy gets more headlines as an Alabama receiver, it will shock no one in Tuscaloosa if Ruggs even proves to be the better player in the NFL, because Ruggs checks every single box. Don't think of him as just a blistering speed guy. He brings a lot more to the table than just that.
So he's what, an X receiver?
At Alabama, he was outside and didn't play the slot much. Jerry Jeudy was in the slot a lot more than Henry Ruggs was. But Ruggs can play every wide receiver position.
And he ran the entire route tree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was not a route that Henry Ruggs didn't run. One interesting fact about Ruggs, we're talking about true freshman impact guys, about how Wills and McKinney were able to play as true freshmen. Henry Ruggs didn't start as a freshman, though he played quite a bit. The first five passes he ever caught as a college football player were all touchdowns. He went 5 for 5, first five receptions, 5 touchdowns. And sort of never let up from there. But Ruggs will take the underneath bubble screen and obviously with this 4.2 speed can go the distance. He also tracks the deep ball extremely well. But again, what will impress most people unfamiliar with this game is the tough catches he makes in traffic. You can just throw it up. Ruggs will beat a couple of defenders to the ball. He's just a really tough kid for somebody that runs like he does.
Indeed, I've seen some tape on him and you're right. And that's a good point, because a lot of people, they get all excited about the 40 time that these receivers run. And, it means nothing if they can't, separate or they can't run the different routes of the tree and whatnot. So that, right. that's really a good point. And I'm glad you made that point, because you do see that on tape that Ruggs is a guy who can, you know, he's slippery. He can beat coverage. He can separate, and he does make the tough catches. And I would not be surprised if his stock continues to rise to where, you know, maybe he's late first round. I mean, this is a really, really deep draft class for receivers.
Yeah, I think I've seen as many as 7 projected in the first round. You know, and it could be more. It's a really deep group. As it gets into the second and third round, I think if the Giants are interested in a receiver, there's going to be high quality available even in rounds 3 and 4 at that position. Now, Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy from Alabama will be long gone by then, but it's a very deep wide receiver group.
Yeah, it's historically deep, that's for sure. Now, there's a few other guys I want to mention. I think all of them on defense. And I'm going to start with the safety, Shyam Carter, who was a guy, he was one of the first defensive players I actually profiled for the website Giants Country that I write for. And he just, for some reason, intrigues me. I just like what he brings to the table. And I'm just kind of curious, in Alabama and their defense, do they switch off the safeties? In other words, do they flip them from free to strong, or do they basically have them play the same position throughout?
No, you know, they flip them quite a bit. It's never one guy in one spot. They rotate. Some of it depends on matchup, but Alabama's, you know, largely a zone defense. I think a lot of people think of Alabama as a real aggressive, you know, man to man, you know, at the line of scrimmage. But really, really Alabama under Nick Saban is primarily a zone defense. What Shyam Carter, and you know, his nickname is Shy, of course, it's a lot easier for people than Shaheen, but Shy Carter, the thing that he brings to the table and what will make him a really solid late draft choice, because I expect, because of his size and speed, he's probably more of a fourth or fifth round pick, but what you're getting with him is tremendous versatility. Shy is a coach on the field. As a matter of fact, Nick Saban has gone out of his way. Whenever Nick is asked about Shy Carter, Coach Saban always brings up the fact he's going to make a great coach one day. So you can tell that Coach Saban wants Shy to go into coaching when football is done. And how valuable is that on the field as a defensive back who's playing traffic cop back there? But Shy has played not just corner and safety at Alabama, but he's played both safety spots, free and strong. He's played center field. He's played up in the box. He's played cornerback out on the island. Where Shy has made most of his plays at Alabama, and where he's made the biggest impact, Alabama calls it star in the NFL, and most just call it the nickelback. But when Alabama goes to 5 defensive backs, Shy slides from corner to inside and plays that star position where he's lined up on the slot receiver. And he's made a ton of plays there. He's also played money, which is what Alabama calls its 6th defensive back, and dime, which is a box position. Even at 190 pounds, Shy's lined up there. So he lines up all over the place. He knows every spot. Nick Saban came up through the NFL ranks as a defensive back coach. That's Nick Saban's specialty. So playing for Coach Saban at defensive back is something the NFL really values, because they know who taught him to play. And Shy can play every spot with Saban's endorsement as a guy that down the road is going to make a heck of a coach one day. So I think his versatility, his intelligence, and his experience makes him a really solid pick on the third day of the draft, when there's not a whole lot of value picks out there. And if the kid was bigger and a step faster, we'd be talking about him as maybe a Friday choice. But not the biggest kid, not the fastest kid. But sometimes it's the guy that can really diagnose things faster than the fast kids, and that's what makes him a great player.
Yeah, I was going to say he plays pretty fast on film, because there's no hesitation in his game, and that versatility. You know, the Giants, they desperately need a true slot cornerback, you know, and they could use a guy who has that versatility that they can move around. And that was one of the things that, you know, certainly drew my attention when I was looking at, you know, Shy Carter early on in the process.
That's exactly his best position too, Patricia. I mean, he's played all the positions at Alabama. but his best position was that slot corner.
Which, like I said, is a big, big need for the Giants. And I would love to see them get him, because just very intriguing player. And he's someone that I've had in my mock drafts to them. I think I've had him as an early day 3 pick. I don't know if his stock has risen since then, but certainly an intriguing player as far as I'm concerned. Another guy who's kind of intriguing, and I know he has a little bit of a background and that's kind of made things murky, is linebacker Terrell Lewis. So what can you tell us about him and how, you know, his background is kind of, I don't know if it's dented his stock or whatnot.
Yeah, I would almost say stock down a little bit based on where projections were a couple of months ago. Terrell's probably the most interesting Alabama player in the entire draft, and interesting in the sense that, I mean, here's a guy coming out of high school that looked like the best kid in the signing class. Every tool is the outside pass rusher. You even think of Chase Young type tools coming out of high school, where you think this kid could be a top 10 pick in the draft just 3 years from now. And he shows up and he is freakishly impressive, really long, physical, pretty versatile for a guy that you just think is a third down player. But he was so athletic, covers a lot of ground. But he had the worst injury luck. He missed almost two entire seasons. He was at Alabama 4 years, his true freshman year, where it's kind of tough to get on the field at Nick Saban's Alabama. But he did manage to be a player you would see in the second half and on special teams, and he showed enough to get everybody very excited about what was to come. He missed an entire season with a shoulder injury that he suffered in the opening game of the season. No, it was an elbow. It was an elbow he hurt in the very first game against Florida State. Very next year, he hurts his knee and is out for the entire season with an ACL. So he really missed two entire seasons of the four he was at Alabama. And there's no doubt that affected things physically and mentally. And while he was healthy this past season was the first time he was a starter for all 13 games, was healthy all season long. I don't want to use the word disappointment because it's just not fair to the kid. Because, again, who misses two back-to-back seasons, and then you still have these high expectations for him, just wasn't as productive as you would think a guy would be that's built like him, that runs like he does. But there was a small stretch about mid-season, right around October during the Tennessee, kind of Alabama plays Tennessee in October. It is right around that time of the year. It was about 3 games in a row. Terrell really flashed, and it was like, there it is. There's the kid that we've been waiting on for 4 years. He is really coming into his own, and then disappears in November and then doesn't play in the bowl game, chose not to play against Michigan in the bowl game. So, again, injuries, definitely an issue. And he doesn't have the explosion that a Chase Young, never developed into Chase Young. But is Terrell going to be one of these guys that after after a year or two in the NFL, after he makes the adjustment to playing on Sundays, his upside is tremendous. He's probably going to be drafted in the 3rd or 4th round. It would not be shocking a year or two from now if he's an elite pass rusher, because it's inside of him. But because of the injuries, Alabama really never got to see what he did. He did miss, like I said, his entire sophomore season with the elbow. He was cleared to play just before Alabama played in the playoffs during the national championship run. So he played the first half of the first game, then was gone for 13 games, is cleared right before the playoffs. And people looking back, that you might remember the classic Alabama-Georgia game where Tua throws the deep ball to Devontae Smith and wins the national championship in overtime. None of that would have happened if Alabama didn't sack Jake Fromm out of touchdown range and made it a very deep field goal. That was Terrell Lewis, who had missed 13 games. He made a critical sack as a sophomore of Jake Fromm in the national championship game. So he's played in big games. He's made big plays. There's a ton of potential there. But gosh, you look at a guy who maybe could have been a Chase Young, and in 4 years, we'd probably get 7 sacks out of him.
Yeah, and with the Giants, what they have basically done, what I've noticed at any rate, is they've kind of shied away from players that have injury histories, you know, and you don't want to call a kid at this point and, you know, injury prone, but the history is, you know, what it is. You can't go back and change it, unfortunately, but I suspect that's going to cause his stock to tumble.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, today I would say 3rd round for Terrell. If I'm wrong, maybe the 4th round, but kids that look like him and run like he does, they usually go higher than that. So, you know, he does play a value position. He is not just a one-trick pony. He's not just a third down player either. This kid's really athletic and tough. And I really thought he would have really benefited had he returned to Alabama. People don't think of him as an early entry guy because he played 4 years at Alabama. But because he missed 2 entire years, he could have returned for a 5th year and did not do that. But because he was never able to be healthy in back-to-back seasons, I thought if he'd come back and had a monster, you know, 5th-year senior season, he could have maybe moved back up into first-round talk. But it had been 4 years, and he was ready for the next step in his career, and he'll certainly be drafted, and some team will be excited to get his potential.
Absolutely. You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Jimmy Stein of Locked On Bama. Jimmy, who are some of the other draft prospects that we're not talking about that you think we should be talking about in terms of maybe potential fits for the Giants?
Well, I think if they're looking for help in the front 7, we've talked about that. Alabama's got a couple other guys that won't be going in the 1st round or the 2nd round that still have a lot of potential. Defensive lineman Raekwon Davis is probably a guy that's falling into the 3rd or 4th round territory. Monstrous NFL-sized tackle, probably 6'6", 295 pounds, or just over 300 when generally Raekwon starts the season around 310 and loses some weight during the season. But he's a 300-pound interior player, long arms, can play the run or the pass. Just another player where disappointment is never a word you would use, but some of these kids come in with such unbelievable, you know, headlines as recruits, and Raekwon is such a huge human being who's an amazing athlete to be as big as he is. And then you think, oh gosh, this is a sack a game interior defensive tackle for 3 years, and sometimes the production just wasn't there. But he's the guy you want getting off the bus first. I mean, he just looks the part as well as anyone. But he'll be a 3rd or 4th round pick and a really solid NFL player. Anthony Jennings was probably among the Alabama guys that will go in the middle rounds. He was probably the best player at Alabama. He's always been highly productive. A 3-year starter, also had a bad injury in the national semifinal game when he was a sophomore. Dominant at times for a guy that's going to be identified as an outside edge setter in the run game. Don't sleep on him as a pass rusher. He can get after the quarterback. I will not be surprised if he's an even better player in the NFL than he was at Alabama. He's very similar to the Washington Redskins, Ryan Anderson, who came from Alabama playing the same position. Anthony Jennings, very similar player to Ryan Anderson, who's having some success with the Redskins. Anthony's probably a 4th round pick, a 5th round pick, because the linebackers who are known as he's really good against the run, they just don't tend to go as high as the guys that are you know, the pass rushers. But Anthony's another guy that I think will prove to be a very good player in the NFL. One other cornerback that we haven't talked about is Trevon Diggs, who I think is a late 1st or 2nd round defensive back coming out of Alabama. He's the younger brother of Stephon Diggs, who's been in the news quite a bit recently, going to the Buffalo Bills. Trevon is his little brother. He is a 6'2", long-arm cornerback. Trevon didn't play in the Senior Bowl and chose not to run at Indianapolis, and then Alabama had to cancel its pro day due to the virus. And I think that's kind of hurt Trevon a little bit because he never really had an official 40 time, which is really important for those corners. But Trevon Diggs has first round talent. He was a dominant player at times for Alabama, and being the younger brother of the highly successful Stephon Diggs, that'll get you a lot of attention. But Trevon Diggs is certainly a second round pick and could even find his way at the end of the first.
Yeah, he's another one that I recently did some film on too, and just tremendous size and plays aggressively, and just, you know, there's a lot to like there. Now, Jimmy, I have to ask you, even though the Giants aren't, you know, at least as far as we know, in the market for another quarterback, Tua's health is going to be a big story. And, you know, obviously with the virus going on, you know, medical checks and rechecks and all that stuff have kind of taken a back seat and whatnot. What can you tell us about Tua's health? Because like I said, that could, where he goes could ultimately have an effect on, you know, whether the Giants are able to trade down and with whom they're able to trade down.
Yeah, I think if a team is sold completely on Tua's health, it's almost easy to foresee someone like the Dolphins or the Chargers not wanting to lose Tua, want to trade up with the Giants or trade up with the Redskins or the Lions, which could shake up the board. I doubt you see it much. I was kind of wondering out loud on Twitter recently if the Dolphins and Chargers would get so consumed with missing out on their quarterbacks, if we might not see Burrow 1, Tua go second, and Herbert go third, which could push, you know, Chase Young to the Giants at 4. And that got the handful of Giants fans that follow me on Twitter were very excited to see that. I was like, well, hold on. I'm just thinking out loud here. It's not an official projection. But the fact of the matter is quarterbacks get overdrafted. They get overdrafted. And by that, I mean you've got to have a franchise quarterback to give your fans hope, and the Dolphins and Chargers both need one right now, and they're picking 5 and 6. So if a medical staff out there is convinced that Tua's injury, and it's not so much to me, Patricia, a short-term thing with Tua, it's a long-term. I think the short-term, even the Dolphins or Chargers who have, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Dolphins and Tyrod Taylor with the Chargers, they could afford to, for lack of a better term, to medically redshirt Tua, where there wouldn't be pressure to play this fall, that you give him plenty of time to recover from his surgery and his long rehab, because they don't immediately need you right now, right now, right now. Maybe in 2021 he's ready to go, similar to what Kansas City did with Patrick Mahomes just a couple of years ago, where Mahomes didn't play his rookie season, didn't play very much either. But to me, I think Tua's hip injury, the real questions to me are long-term. You know, is he going to be facing some arthritis-type issues, even very young? What's the stability of the hip? I mean, is there a chance that you could re-injure and the hip pop out of place again? I think those are bigger questions than his health right now, because his health right now is honestly beating every estimate. Every estimate that was given to Tua, he's beaten, because he's been relentless in his rehab, which matches his personality since he showed up at Alabama. This is a kid that will do whatever it takes to be a good player. That's what Tua does. If you ask him, you know, to work at it 24 hours a day, he will. And that's why he's beaten all these estimates. So I think in the short term, it's been a remarkable recovery. And I believe Tua will be able to play in games this fall. I truly believe that. But to me, the larger question is, what's the long-term prognosis for that hip? Can we really expect that he's healthy in year 5? He's also had other injuries at Alabama. He has hurt both ankles. He's had surgery on both ankles. He broke his thumb in a spring practice. He's had a litany of injuries. And it's been really unfortunate, because when Tua has been completely healthy and Alabama firing on all cylinders, you know, personally, of course, I'm biased, but I don't think there was much of a doubt as who the best player in college football was. But Tua ended up battling this injury or that injury, and it left him with no Heisman Trophy and only one national championship.
And that's a good point you raised, because, you know, obviously the NFL community tends to look at players a little bit differently than those of us on the outside. And now it makes me wonder if, you know, everybody's got Tua plugged into the Dolphins. And now I'm starting to wonder if maybe he's rated as high as, you know, some of these draft analysts think that he might be.
It could be, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder when it comes to that. And another thing about where you go in the draft, it's not 32 teams sitting around voting where a kid should go. It only takes one team to love you. So it only takes one team. And who knows? Is it the Patriots? Is it the, you know, the Buccaneers, who will obviously need someone to replace Tom Brady in two seasons or so? Someone could be completely in love with Tua and trade everything to move up. We'll see what happens, but one thing that almost assuredly happens, because it happens every year, are teams trading up to get the quarterback they want.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that the Giants are involved in that trade, because they are in a plum spot, and
they really are.
And if they can get a couple of extra picks, you know, whether it be in the first round or the third round or whatever, that would be ideal. Jimmy, final question.
Sure.
Final question.
I was just going to say, from the outside, I certainly don't know the Giants like you do. But what I like about the Giants' draft position is, if they really want a tackle, if, like, you know, we really need a tackle for the offensive line and for our young quarterback, they don't have to pick at 4. They can pick at 6, 7, 8, 9, because Becton and Wirfs and Jedrick Wills, they're all good. They're all good enough to go at 4, but they may still be there. One of them will be there at low. So the Giants are just in a perfect position. If that's the position they want, they can trade down and still end up with the guy they want.
If they don't trade down, I'll tell you what, it's going to be a major disappointment for me. Now, I know Dave Gettleman, historically, he's afraid of trading down, because he's always, you know, there's that concern that, you know, oh, I might miss out on somebody. But at the combine, he made the comment that there are a lot of good players. So that just, to me, kind of was a trigger that, okay, yeah, I'm going to look to trade down if I get the right, you know, offer. So that's definitely going to be worth keeping an eye on. Jimmy, final question. Out of all the prospects on the Crimson Tide, who is the most, who just absolutely has New York Giant written all over him, the best value, you think, for the Giants? And where do you see him going in the draft order?
I think, you know, the only guy, if the Giants stick at 4, the only and because they're not interested in quarterback, understandably, if the Giants stick at 4, Jedrick Wills, he would be a worthy pick at number 4. You're not going to go wrong with him. He has a nice ceiling, but what you really have to like is no floor. Jed Wills will be if assuming good health, Jed Wills will be a very good player in the NFL. I mean, he is a, you are not taking a chance on him, even at number 4. So that's one guy. And if there's a 1B, if Xavier McKinney or Trevon Diggs fall out of the first round and are available early in the second round, you know, and the Giants could pick up one of those defensive backs, you know, McKinney being a safety, Diggs being a corner, you're getting first round value with those guys. They are first round talents. They could get squeezed out of the first round because there's so many good tackles and so many good receivers that defenders like those two, who would typically be first round picks, get kicked out of the first round. So I would say Wills at 4 or McKinney/Diggs in early in round 2. They would all be very good fits for the Giants and be really good players.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't go wrong with Bama players, because Nick Saban really does a good job getting them, you know, trained up and coached up. And again, you know, you have the Joe Judge connection, you got the Burton Burns connection, and it just wouldn't surprise me. You know, a few years ago when Tom Coughlin was here, it just seemed like you could set your watch to a Syracuse player getting selected. You know, Coughlin had the ties with Syracuse. And I just wonder if, you know, that's going to be the case with Alabama moving forward.
Joe Judge has not just, you know, his connections at Mississippi State as well. I will not be surprised at all if there are more, not just Alabama or Mississippi State, but I won't be surprised to see at the end of the day, the Giants draft has a lot of SEC flavor to it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's probably a safe assumption there, but you never know. That's the beauty of the draft is we could sit here and we could do many different simulations and mocks and whatnot, and nobody ever gets it right. But hey, listen, it's fun to try, and people seem to enjoy the mocks and the projections. And you know, all we could do is just keep gathering information. Which I thank you for providing the information on the Bama draft prospects and see what becomes of it. So Jimmy, tell everybody where else they can find you on social media and in addition to the Locked On Bama podcast.
Sure. You can follow me at LJS Law on Twitter, and we produce the Locked On Bama podcast 5 days a week. And I'm also the host or co-host of Inside the Crimson Tide on FM radio 99.5 in Mobile, Alabama.
And unfortunately, you're probably these days, I guess, quiet, right? With college sports having been canceled and everything.
Well, we coming up with the content is to some extent a challenge, but it's my favorite thing to talk about. We somehow find a way on our Locked On Bama podcast. What we've been doing is sort of going over games throughout the Saban era, sort of rehashing them. We rewatch an Alabama game from yesteryear, but all throughout the Saban era. We didn't want to go too far deep in history, but we've been watching an Alabama game from 2008 or 2009, and then rehashing it with our listeners the next day, with them chiming in with questions and comments themselves about what they remember about that game. So we've been doing a lot of that, but recruiting never ends, so there's always a lot to talk about with recruiting.
Well, we certainly appreciate, again, the time, and it's going to be interesting to see if any other surprises come out of, the draft that maybe we overlooked. So, Jimmy, stay safe, my friend. Hope everybody is well down by you. And again, thank you so much for coming on the Locked On Giants podcast with me. Giant fans, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with more shows as we look at the Giants free agent acquisitions and we continue to look at the draft prospects. For Jimmy Stein, I'm Patricia Traina. Have a great one.